So for the medical board to do this was, in my view, extremely tyrannical and very reminiscent of what happened to my family under communism. My mom tells the story of how when she was in college under communism, she was in an adjacent room when they came for one of her professors. She actually heard them come into his office. They were berating him and they were upset with him because he had been teaching genetics. And that had been banned back in the day. And they ultimately removed him from the office and she never saw him again. So for this to happen was terrifying because I never thought something like this would happen in our beautiful America.
Hello, critical thinkers. Welcome to this new episode of Healthy and Awake podcast. Here we question the conventional, explore the unconventional, and seek truth in health and wellness. I'm your host, Mike Vera, and today we have a very special guest, Dr. Renata Moon, who is a pediatrician with over 25 years of clinical experience, board certified in general pediatrics and pediatric hospital medicine. She graduated from Washington University in St. Louis and has degrees in biochemistry and medicine. Dr. Moon, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm glad we could talk. I know Dr. Lynn Finn, who was a previous guest, set this up for us, and I'm very grateful to her.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind, some of our guests might not be familiar with some of your work. Would you mind getting us caught up to speed?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm a practicing pediatrician. I work mostly as a hospital pediatrician. So I care for sick kids anywhere from birth up to 18 years of age. And I'm a former clinical associate professor of medicine with several medical schools.
And you're a real warrior for truth, too. I was watching some not only podcasts, but you were, I believe, testifying. I saw you sitting in front of Dr. Peter McCullough, as well as several other people. And I know that's a lot of pressure, especially in a world where telling the truth is kind of frowned upon by many people. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think our world's just turned upside down, you know, in 2020. The world just went mad. And like everyone, I just sat there and watched it happening live as they were filming. You know, the TV would come on at night and all the scary music would play and we would get all tense and anxious and the whole world was dying of COVID. And clearly people were very ill from COVID. I'm not downplaying the illness for adults, but as things began to clear in terms of all of our fear, I really began to critically think and question much of what we were seeing. And so I love that you opened your show with the thank you to critical thinkers, because we all need to be critical thinkers.
Yeah, I really do think that's at the heart of it, because a lot of these problems that I saw were really just in part outsourcing our thinking.
Yeah.
You know, we want to trust these experts in white coats, and especially with something so serious, we're trying to make the safe choice. And I think certain things were presented as the safe choice, even though, as we know now, it was quite different. And you were really at the forefront. I remember seeing you open up this pamphlet, and yeah. I won't give any spoilers, but can you tell us about that part?
Yeah, I mean, I had a busy practice, was busy seeing patients in both hospital and clinic settings, and I'd never seen anything like COVID, like none of us had, right? But I had kids in the office with 104 fevers from reasons other than COVID, actually, the majority of them when we tested them. But they were crying and asking me if they were going to die. These are 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds. The level of fear that these kids had, you know, we all were fearful. But to answer your question, yeah, over time, very rapidly, actually, I began to question much about what was happening. And I certainly had many questions about the COVID shot as it was preparing to roll out. And was watching the hearings and that were being held about authorizing this for children, and was yelling at my computer because they simply didn't have the data. And don't take my word for it. You all know this, but you know, one of the physicians sitting on that committee actually said openly during the committee, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, basically, we don't have the data. We need to roll it out there, meaning roll it out to our nation's kids, who at that point we knew had a statistical, not a complete zero, but a statistical zero risk of a fatality from COVID. So why were we giving them this product? And so I was alarmed and concerned and never ordered it or recommended it for any of my patients. So I have a clean conscience with that, with the COVID shot. But over time, I was seeing, as the shot rolled out, I was seeing an increase in cases of heart inflammation, myocarditis, in my community. I know what normal is, and I was hearing about it far more often than I should have been, not from patients necessarily, but from the community. And it reached a point where I began to speak out about, you know, why were we giving this to our nation's children? So after I began to speak out, I was invited by a sitting U.S. senator. I was invited by Senator Johnson to come to Washington, D.C. at my own expense and during my personal time off from my work as a pediatrician and from my work as a professor of medicine at a medical school. And so I flew out to D.C. to express my concerns about this COVID shot being recommended for children. And that was in December of 2022. So.
Well, thank you for doing that, because it's really, I mean, there are so many words for my thoughts around kids getting these injections. It's disturbing, to say the least. And you're out there sounding the alarm. Was there a particular moment? Was it the pamphlet, or was there a moment you can recall where you started to see these red flags? That, would you call it a wake up moment, or did you kind of get it already?
It was over time. I mean, we had to watch to see what would happen, right? Because remember, kids weren't getting this until they approved it sometime, I think, in the fall of 2021 for the younger kids. And so, you know, it took some time. It was in the spring, actually, of 2022, if I recall correctly. I'd have to look back at exact dates, but I went to visit a friend after being at one of these events where I was concerned about many other things that were happening during the COVID situation. I just went to visit a friend that I hadn't seen in person for many years. And she was telling me over lunch how her son had developed myocarditis following his injections that were given to him in the military. And this was like, this is a number of cases now of myocarditis that I had heard of. And you have to understand that as a practicing pediatrician, and as a pediatrician who worked in a hospital for most of my career, I know what the incidence of myocarditis is, and it's a rare thing. And here I am hearing about it, even at lunch with a friend, clearly related to the timing of the vaccine having been given. And so, yeah, the moments came in just real shocking bits of information like this that many of us were putting together, many of us that knew what normal is. And we said, this is not okay. There's something is very wrong at this point. Yeah.
How does it feel to be a doctor who can clearly see the truth on all these things in a world with doctors who not only don't see it, but actively seem to not want to see it?
To be honest, it's been beyond distressing. You know, I've been speaking out. I've spoken out many times. As soon as I saw what was happening, I began to speak. And because we took an oath, right? We took an oath to do no harm. And I was in a position where I could see this. So as soon as I saw and suspected a problem, I began to speak out about it. But I've been honestly appalled by many of my colleagues who have just sat there and watched this happen and said nothing. I don't understand it. I don't understand the cowardice of it and the lack of responsibility, the ethics, the unethical nature of this. They took the same oath to do no harm, and yet they've continued to do harm by not saying anything. You know, not speaking is the same as doing harm, as causing harm. And so I really am upset and ashamed of my profession at this point. Yeah.
Well, I feel your pain on that. And I would definitely say it's lies by omission, right? Because they're not lying. Some of them are very silent. These people who were very vocal in the beginning are now crickets. The more stuff comes out, crickets. You know, and to me, oh, go ahead.
No, you're right. Crickets, absolute crickets. And we were ostracized. You know, other physicians have spoken out. I've become friends with many of them. And so, you know, I'm certainly not alone in having spoken out, but I think I'm one of the only, just a handful of pediatricians that spoke out at the early onset of this and, you know, watching how we were ostracized, seeing how they came after us, they targeted us. They not only wouldn't listen to us, but they belittled us, they humiliated us. And none of that matters, because what really matters is the fact that people have died from these shots. We have harmed people and absolutely injured them, and in some cases killed them with these shots. This is absolutely unethical and intolerable, and I have no words for this. This is, how can you sit there and watch this happen and say and do nothing? I don't understand it, except for it has happened in history past, right? It happened in the 1930s. It has happened in the past. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think there's an element of cognitive dissonance going on for sure. And it's a shame, because I'm really torn. I struggle with this every day where, you know, I really believe deep down these doctors, they want to do the right thing. They're good people. I don't think they're bad people. And I've said this before on the show. You know, I grew up watching my dad, who's a medical doctor. He really inspired me. He means the world to me. And I've just seen him. And maybe that's just left an imprint on me as to how I see other doctors. But it's just hard to wrap my head around how broken things have gotten, and the propaganda, the influence that have so broken some people's minds that they can't see what is so obvious.
Yeah, to me, there's a difference, right, with the physician who can't see this, because there has been a lot of propaganda. You know, our medical journals are filled with propaganda. We've seen that there for a very long period of time. I have, at least, and certainly it's in our mainstream legacy media. I've seen that there since at least 2010 is when I first noticed.
Well, not to interrupt you, but what would be an example of that, if you don't mind?
Just absolute falsehoods, you know, safe and effective constantly with this shot. That would be a great example there. The distortion of truth. It's, you know, so many conditions. You know, there's an increase in myocarditis, and we're expecting to see that, you know, just all sorts of things that are kind of feeding this idea that everything that you're seeing now is normal when we know it's not. So I could dig it out. I've been taking screenshots all along and certainly could dig out absolute examples for you, but it's been ongoing. I first noticed it in our mainstream media back in 2010 or 11, somewhere in there. I think 2010, because I remember standing in my living room and I was literally flipping the clicker between BBC and one of our mainstream channels here in America. And at the time, it's not that way, I don't think, any longer, but at the time, BBC actually was still sharing the news. And I remember thinking, what's wrong with our American news? And I stood there and I just flipped, because I was getting real news from BBC. And I flipped back to our channel and it was baloney. It was social nonsense that we didn't need to know. It wasn't about the war in whatever country or the, you know, new policy that had just been implemented. It was baloney. And I stood there and I watched it and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. But, you know, my family history is that my mom was born in a communist country. She was born in former Czechoslovakia. And my dad was actually born in Argentina. They met in Czechoslovakia and eventually defected and fled and came to America, where I was born. They came here as legal immigrants. And so I, as a young child and as a growing teenager and then young adult, actually visited Czechoslovakia a number of times under communism. So I've seen communism. I speak Czech. I've watched my grandmother as a young child, you know, deal with propaganda and talk about it and try to get real news. And so I think that perhaps I had a better understanding of what propaganda is, because when I saw it here in our American media, I couldn't believe it, but I knew what I was seeing. I was seeing the same thing my relatives had fled from.
Hey, have you noticed how broken conventional medicine is, and it only treats symptoms instead of solving root problems? I mean, it's no wonder more people than ever struggle with chronic health issues, stubborn weight gain, low energy, and plenty more challenges. Actually, here's how Mike, a client of mine at Avantia Health Optimization, feels about our hyper-personalized approach.
Number one, You save me focus of attention. I have other things that are pressing and pending. I no longer have the playing time. So I need somebody to help me get the information I need specifically. You're saving me hours upon hours of time, but you're also saving me the youthfulness and clarity you have of cutting through the chase. So you have saved me time, financial money, the thinking, and the labor, the intense labor, and that is worth all the money in the world.
So as most of you know, I'm Mike Vera, board-certified health and wellness coach, host of Healthy and Awake podcast, and founder of Avanti Health Optimization. We deliver hyper-personalized coaching addressing lifestyle as the missing link. Whether you're battling chronic health challenges, aiming for sustainable weight loss, or you're a busy executive or athlete needing peak performance, I'm your guy. Your first session is just $1, so you can try out health coaching, get a feel for it, and you can visit AvantiaHealthOptimization.com or visit the link in the show notes. So check out Avantia, because your health deserves solutions that truly work for you. So you must be pretty intrigued then when you hear these narratives in America that are pro-communism. And I've had a few discussions like that on the show.
Yeah.
And you never hear these pro-communist ideas from the people who have actually lived in communist countries. It's always American college students who maybe read a few things that their professor tells them to read. Have you noticed that at all?
Absolutely. Our schools have been very busy indoctrinating our children and our young adults and teaching them that communism is this amazing thing. And, you know, it's pretty simple. If communism is so amazing, why have countless millions died under these regimes? And why have the brave ones and the lucky ones fled, left everything behind like my relatives did and fled with the clothes on their back and that's it? They left their family behind. They left their possessions behind. If it's so amazing, why do people flee? It's because it literally is a living hell. Everything that you do is policed and, you know, you're tracked. You have nothing. You have nothing. You're lucky if you survive with your life. And these young people don't know that because, you know, inherently when someone presents the idea of communism, it sounds lovely. You know, we're all going to be the same. We're all going to be happy and the same, and you won't have to work as hard, and it's all just going to be handed to you. But here's the problem. There's no incentive. You lose your incentive to work. You know, why would you get up and go to work if your neighbor doesn't work all day and gets the same payment, has the same food, has the same house, has the same everything? Why would you work? So then no one works. And as my mom likes to say, yeah, she says, under communism, we were all equal, all right? We were all equally miserable under communism.
It is a very utopian idea. And the phrase comes to mind, it's all sizzle and not steak. I've seen the steak in Cuba, at least in videos, and that's not steak you want to eat. So,
actually, I have a quick story to tell. So when I was traveling to the communist country of Czechoslovakia, one time we had to, we flew through Austria. But at any rate, the airline lost my luggage. And so there I was in Czechoslovakia with just the clothes on my back, and I needed some new clothes. So I went and purchased all new clothing from the stores there. I just an outfit or two of new clothing. So I'm wearing Czech clothing. I come from a mom who was born there in Czechoslovakia. So I look very Czech, you know, in terms of my genetics, right? And yet, even without speaking, people could tell that I was not from Czechoslovakia, that I was an American. And I actually, and I speak Czech, but at first people can't always tell. I eventually in a conversation, they figure it out. But so I don't know all the, you know, recent terms and things like that in Czech, but they could tell without my even speaking. And I said to them, how in the world? I said this to a bunch of different people. I said, how can you tell that I'm not Czech? Why are you walking up to me and saying, hi, you're an American, or and trying to speak with me? And they said, it's because of the way that you walk, because you are, they said, you're happy. You're happy. So we can tell that you're not Czech, even though you're wearing all the Czech clothing. And even though you haven't spoken, and you're, you know, blonde and Caucasian and you look Czech, we can tell that you're not from here because you are happy.
Wow.
Yeah.
So your spirit hasn't been crushed, and we kind of noticed that, is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, that's correct. That's really what they were saying. Your spirit has not been crushed. And so you're not like the rest of us looking at the ground. You know, my mom would say they would have queues, you know, big long lines of people waiting for certain products at times. And yeah, they would carry like a bag folded up in their purse or whatever, just in case they came across one of these lines. And my mom says, you know, she would always get in the line, sometimes not even knowing what the line was for. But clearly, if a line had formed, it was something that she could use and need, because there was really not much of anything. And I remember going to grocery stores with my grandmother there. And I remember there was a big bin of potatoes, and they were like, you know, I was an American child. I was like, they're half rotten. You know, they're not right. And my grandma said, just pick out the ones that are less rotten than the others and they'll be fine. And, you know, that there weren't a lot of choices in the grocery stores. And so I understood why she wanted to see, you know, why she wanted to bring back photos. As an older adult grandmother, she was allowed to travel to America to visit us because they didn't really care if she came back or not. So she was allowed to come with a visa to visit briefly. But then I understood why she wanted photos in our grocery stores next to the apples and the oranges, because no one would have believed her. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, not to make this kind of messy, I mean, it's clear that, you know, there's plenty of downfalls to communism, and that's not exactly the answer. You know, I often think of the most skeptical perspective on my show, and I can imagine someone saying, well, we could criticize capitalism, and it's actually led to a lot of the problems that actually you and I have discussed today. And just to be clear, right off the bat, I'm not some kind of anti-capitalist.
Well, I understand.
But it does make sense to me that the capitalistic nature of the country that we're in now kind of led to this pharmaceutical cartel that's caused all these problems that we've been talking about. Do you have, I guess, to make this productive, do you have any kind of positive take? Are you optimistic that things are moving in the right direction?
No, it's interesting that you said that. I've actually been thinking a great deal about exactly what you said over the last number of years. You know, you're correct. Capitalism has led to this position that we're in right now. We have these huge pharmaceutical companies that have literally taken us over. If you look at the control they now have over media, over regulatory agencies, over physicians and healthcare and hospitals and honestly medical schools, right? They've taken this over. And, you know, I would say there probably isn't any perfect system, because human nature gets in the way of everything, right? Greed, the wanting more, the not wanting to work as hard, the wanting to take from other people, that all the negative aspects that we have in society sort of take over and start to push and pull at things. But I would say this, the ability to have a discussion with one another, the ability to think critically, the ability to, for me to present my argument to you and for you to present your argument to me, and for both of us, maybe we're on different sides of things at some point. Maybe we learn from one another. That is the very foundation of a productive, happy, healthy society. And it is certainly the foundation of science and medicine. And without that, we simply have these big entities, whoever they are, these, you know, dystopian type rulers, or like under communism, this elite that tells everyone what they can and can't do. Under capitalism, we've morphed into this horrible stranglehold that this whole regime right now, the whole pharmaceutical, medical, industrial complex has on the American citizen. We're literally being strangled by this. But we need to get back to a neutral point where we can have open discussion, dialogue, and debate again. Clearly, communism doesn't work. I think capitalism is much better than communism, but we've morphed into some sort of madness right now, and we need to come out of that madness.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And the more I think about this topic, the more I almost think the words muddy the waters, communism and capitalism. I really think, especially based on previous conversations, that centralization versus decentralization, regardless of the infrastructure, is kind of the issue. And especially communism, I mean, the centralization is inherent to communism, where it's not necessarily the case with capitalism, but there's kind of some aspects of that in there. And you could argue that that's just the centralization, especially in medicine, has gotten to such an egregious point that we might as well be in communism.
We really are. I would argue that we are absolutely right now in the very early stages of communism, because you and I can still have this conversation right now without worrying that someone is busting down our door and coming for us. But I sat with my grandmother in her apartment as a 12-year-old, 11-year-old child, and I listened to her listening to Voice of America, which was us. It was the Americans piping the truth in to my relatives under communism. And I was super proud to be an American, because we were the ones sending the truth into my grandmother. But she had the radio on very softly and very quietly, because she was afraid that if the neighbors had heard, you know, you lose that control, right? You lose that control. You can't do anything with your life under these communist systems. We absolutely are right now in the early stages of communism, but we still can speak. We still can move. We still can change this. My relatives were to the point, and remember, this was prior to computers, that I traveled there. This was when I was in my, you know, younger years. They had to check in with their local, like say my aunt wanted to go visit her grandmother who lived two villages over. She had within 24, 48 hours, she needed to check in with the local police department and register with them, because she had traveled, you know, 30 kilometers to visit her grandmother. They had, that was before computers. They had essentially full control over their citizenry. So where you could travel, what kind of job you had, you would take a job and you could not quit it and leave unless you had another job already signed for. You couldn't just go and be home for a little while. You needed to stay employed. You had to show those papers. So it was this constant showing of papers and this constant being told what to do under communism. We are absolutely in the early stages of that here in America, this real ID card that is being forced on us. I have huge flashbacks to what I saw under communism with that, where, you know, all it takes then is to say, oh, well, you can't travel now to the next state like you used to be able to. Right now it's just for air travel. But why? Why do we need that for air travel? You know, this is all starting to come down around us and solidify around us. And it's not good right now what's happening with really everything.
And that's not at all a theory that you said. I mean, Bill Gates has openly said these ideas of smart cities that are built in such a way where you don't even need to leave this 15-minute area. So it has gotten pretty crazy, and people are starting to wake up, thankfully. But before I forget, I want to ask, you mentioned, I think you said it was your grandmother quietly listening to these messages of freedom from the American airwaves. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, Voice of America. Yeah, less Ameriki is what it was called in Czech. Hlas means voice. Hlas Ameriki, the voice of America. Yeah.
That's cool. So, I mean, she was quietly listening to these things, yearning for freedom. What do you think she would say if she saw the work that you're putting in today, spreading the truth bravely?
Oh, I don't know. I like any grandmother, I imagine she would be proud, right? I mean, grandmothers are proud of their granddaughters usually. This quest for freedom is something that we all have. I think we all want freedom, right? You want the freedom to say, I'm going to go to another city and I don't need to have permission to do that. Or I'm going to quit my job, or I'm going to go buy this in the store without needing permission. And this very idea that all of a sudden, you know, this is all out there openly. They're talking about linking, you know, as we become more and more digital, that a certain percentage of your earnings would have to go towards approved products, you know, things that they had approved of. Again, it's all trapping us in to a place where we don't want to be, if you want to be free. And free is free. Free means you make decisions and you you live with the consequences of those decisions to a large extent, right? If you don't work hard, maybe it's harder to have food on the table. And, you know, these are all, it's all part of a capitalist society that the whole rags to riches story that is America. You know, the people here in America today that really want communism, leave and go to a different country if you want communism. America is built on our constitutional values and freedom. And that rags to riches story, my parents, again, they came here legally. They were vetted. They applied to different countries. They were political refugees. They would have been thrown in prison for having left Czechoslovakia without permission, because they did that without permission. In fact, my mom was sentenced in her absence to, I think, 3 years of hard labor for having left without permission. Her crime, that was her crime, was having left without permission. So they came here with literally like $2 in their pocket and a hard work ethic, and always instilled that in me. Work hard, be the best you can be. This is America. You can do whatever is within the, you know, your ability level and within your work ethic level. This is what America was built off of. We are Americans, and that's what our country is built from. This is the foundation of our country, you know, faith, family, and freedom. Yeah.
Amen. Well said. You know, this rags to riches story for many people, and I speak to a lot of these people, is to become a doctor and go to medical school. And I know you've had that experience, and I've heard some stories. Actually, Dr. Finn mentioned, I believe, that you were fired for encouraging asking questions. Did I get that right?
Yeah. So the COVID years were interesting. I was actually fired twice. I'm an overachiever, I guess. I was fired initially over the mandate from the clinic where I was working, because I said, no, this is not, look at history. We don't force people to take a medical product against their will, especially one that is relatively untested and has unknown side effects. People have the right to decide if they're going to take that product or not. And I actually went and I thought in my head, I thought, it reminds me, there's something called the Nuremberg Code, is there not? So I went and I pulled it up, and it pretty much checked every box. We were breaking every box of the Nuremberg Code. And so I wrote my employer a letter. I don't think they cared for it very much. I concluded it by saying, in conclusion, you are in direct violation of the Nuremberg Code. And I signed my name. I would not quit. I simply said I wouldn't take part in their absolutely tyrannical mandate. And so I told them, you'll have to fire me if you want me to be gone. So they removed me from my fully booked clinic. I had patients booked out for weeks, and they told me I could no longer see those patients. And 2 months later, that was their waiting period they had. They sent me a termination letter. So I checked the box for fired by communists over a tyrannical mandate. And then the second firing was actually more worrisome to me even than that one. So as we talked about, I spoke at that Senate hearing in Washington, D.C. in December of 2022. And I spoke as a private citizen at the invitation of a sitting U.S. senator. And I said, you know, there's an increase in myocarditis. The package insert is blank. Again, I wasn't ordering the shot for a child, but I'd had a chance to get my hands on a package insert, and I couldn't believe it. When you unfold the whole thing and it's blank, how does anyone know what's in it? Yes, there's a QR code on that package insert. I did scan it, and it said product not found or unknown product. I have a photo of it. No one could tell what was in the bottle. And I said, you know, other nations have shut this down for their young children. Why are we promoting this as a nation without any discussion? And so as a result of that testimony at the U.S. Senate hearing, where I questioned this, my medical school sent me a letter a few months later. They were very upset that I had appeared at that Senate hearing. Again, I wasn't representing the medical school at all. I sent a press release ahead of time stating that. And the placard in front of my name, in front of my seat, just had my name on. I was very careful to make sure that I did everything in my power to show that I was not representing the medical school. Anyway, they were upset by the content of what I'd had to say at that Senate hearing. And they sent a letter to that effect, and they ended up terminating my employment by not renewing my annual faculty contract a few months later. And a week after they terminated my employment by not renewing my faculty contract, they reported my testimony at that Senate hearing to my state medical board to have my license investigated for having spoken. And so I'm going to remind the listener that, you know, the state medical boards are there to keep dangerous physicians from practicing, and to just to make sure there's you know, that people who are alcoholics, for example, physicians who maybe have a drug use problem or some sort of situation like that are not out there actively practicing. They are not there to be weaponized against pediatricians who have legitimate concerns about the dangers of a brand new product that you have just unleashed on America's children. But yet that's exactly what happened. The state medical board decided they would launch an investigation against me, and they did, for my free speech all the way over in Washington, D.C. at a Senate hearing. And I'm not perfect. Nobody is, obviously, but I have had a clean career record. I've never had a lawsuit against me. I've never had any actions against any state medical license in over 25 years of practice. So for the medical board to do this was, in my view, extremely tyrannical and very reminiscent of what happened to my family under communism. My mom tells the story of how when she was in college under communism, she was in an adjacent room when they came for one of her professors. She actually heard them come into his office. They were berating him. They were very upset with him. And they ultimately removed him from the office, and she never saw him again. And they were upset with him because he had been teaching genetics, and that had been banned back in the day. So for this to happen was terrifying, because I never thought something like this would happen in our beautiful America. This happens in other countries with tyrannical regimes. It does not happen in our beautiful America, and yet it did. And we all need to understand what that means, because ultimately, the people that came for the professor that my mom saw taken away, I used to think it was other faculty and administration, and she corrected me. She said, no, it was the military police that came for him. And while the military police didn't come for me, I certainly was pulled away just like that professor was that my mom saw. And the military police is the next step if we don't stop this. This gets more and more tyrannical if we don't stop this. Because I was just, the same thing happened to me. I was pulled away from my teaching. I was pulled away from my position at the medical school for the act of speaking.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry you went through that. Second, you're a badass. I mean, to do that, I think I've used the word bravery twice already, and I'm tempted to use it again. It's so apt, because I get messages all the time from people. I'm not doing that things on the level you are. I mean, you're going and testifying publicly. You're helping patients, children, dealing with myocarditis. And I get these messages on LinkedIn just posting things. And they say, wow, you know, I really agree with you, but I have to be quiet. I'm self-censoring. I'm censoring myself. Do you have any doctors that kind of support you quietly behind the scenes and, you know, maybe wish they could do what you're doing?
Yeah, there are quite a few. And you know, I've had plenty come up to me and say, you know, I'm with you, but I can't because I have a boat I'm paying off or something. And at some point, I don't even know what to say, honestly. I mean, I'm grateful for support, but let's put it this way. If you're driving down a very dark road and you know you're about to go off a cliff, do you keep driving down that road or do you stop and turn around? I've seen the dark road. I saw communism as a young child. I know the road we're on. we're on a terrible, terrible road. And this is not about, you know, me at all. This is about what this means for our entire country. And likewise, I've had colleagues and friends say things like, oh, great job fighting this. You know, it's a great job, honey, you know, kind of thing. And but then they go off on their weekend or whatever. They say, like, I wish you the best, you know, like somehow I'm on this like vacation or something. No, this is all of us. We're all tied in together with this. This is all of us together as Americans that have to say no to this. No, we are not going to live under a tyrannical communist type system where we have no control over our lives. We're not going to do that. We need to stand together and say no. So we all have something to lose. You are, by staying quiet, you are causing huge problems for your children and grandchildren down the road. This will not end well if we don't turn this around. We must turn this around. And that's how I see it. So this is not about what I've been through or anything. This is the example of what this looks like right now. And if all you have to do is look at history to see where this will go. And it's already gone way too far, but take a look at history to see where else it would go next, because it gets uglier. It doesn't get better. These tyrannical systems that have happened in history past, and they all have their own flavor, you know, under the Nazis, Stalin, Lenin, Chairman Mao, and so many other regimes, they all have their own flavor, but none of them ended well. They all ended with disasters for those countries.
You know, I just asked you about these doctors that kind of quietly support you. Mm-hmm. I struggle some days because I, like you, you know, I'm trying to tell the truth as much as I can. And it's really tough to not be bitter. You know, I'm trying to do the right thing. And it's not like I'm seeking the appreciation, but it's almost like gaslighting, you know, like I see things clearly and I try to tell people and it's just doesn't go noticed. But one thing that does help me be positive about it, and you're really similar in this regard, is there's this network of really cool, badass, elite healthcare professionals and medical doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Bowden, Dr. Lynn Finn, yourself. And I mean, I'm just thrilled every day that I wake up and I get to talk to cool people like you. But how does that feel compared, especially to the last question that I asked you, to be in this pretty elite group of healthcare professionals?
Yeah, I love these people. They're wonderful. They're great. And, you know, and I love all my colleagues too. The ones that are quietly supportive, I love them too. We just have to get them to a point where they see that they have skin in the game with this. This is not just about a few of us speaking out. This is all of us. Now, I do see a lot of positive things. I'm actually attending a conference right now that has a lot of different professionals here, not just medical, but a lot of different arenas. And I'm not, as you can tell, I'm not terribly quiet about what's happening. We need to be very loud about what's happening right now and not pushy necessarily, but just get our messaging across. People are awake. Many, many people are awake to what's happening now. I'm convinced of that after today. And speaking with complete strangers who, you know, 2 or 3 years ago would have looked at you like you had 10 heads and thought you were crazy. And now are like, you know, they look down at the ground. They're like, yeah, it's really bad. It's really bad. I haven't had anyone really push back at all today with the conversation that we've had. And I try to have polite conversations with people, but just say, look, this is what's happening. Do you see it? And every last one of them today has been like, yeah, it's not good. So that's good. We are waking people up. The next step is, what will they do? We need to all be speaking about this. We need to not stay silent, because there's that saying that I'll mess up if I try to duplicate it. But there's that famous saying that says that evil happens when good men sit and do nothing. And we are watching evil happen as people have sat and not done enough. So I'm, again, back to what your original question was. I'm very grateful to the colleagues that have been in this from the get-go. And I've been, you know, with them because I had my eyes open to this. But we welcome the rest of you, please come join us because we are growing in number. There is no doubt that we are growing in number and more people understand the severity of what we're facing. Yeah.
Well, I love your optimism and it makes me think of this question that I'm obsessed with. I think about it every day and it's just, what do things look like on the other side of this? Especially assuming, just for the sake of argument, let's say all our efforts pay off, the truth finally gets through, the people are fully awake, and it's spread across the airwaves. Any thoughts on what things look like on the other side of this?
Well, I would change your wording a little bit. It's not if we get through this, we must get through this. I don't know. Have you ever traveled to visit China? I'm just curious.
No.
Some of those countries. I actually, it's almost like what my story with this is almost like it's been some crazy script that I'm just playing a role in. It's just the weirdest thing. Some days I'm like, is this really happening? But in 2018, I went to visit China. I had a tour of China. Their citizens are so locked down there. You probably saw those videos of the citizens locked in their skyscrapers with those robotic dogs walking the streets and keeping them trapped. This is a nightmare. We are in a nightmare. There are days where I look out and I see, you know, people playing on the beach, people just going about their normal lives, like just nothing is happening. And yet everything is happening. The media is clearly lying to people. They haven't told them about any of this going on because we have a locked down media still. And we have to get out of this. We must get out of this. We have to believe that we will get out of this in order to do that. So there's no if, there is when. When we get out of this and get our freedom back and get some semblance of America back, then I think it's going to take a lot of conversations with people and a lot of just really heart-to-heart discussions about how we got here and what we do moving forward. Because we're headed into a situation where, look what happened with this pediatrician who spoke. What message does that send to every single medical student? And that's not just happening at this one medical school that came after me. This is happening in our medical schools, in our law schools nationwide. What message does my termination send to any student who wants to critically think and speak and ask questions? What message does it send to faculty? What is happening in our local hospitals right now nationwide? What's happening in our hospitals? I can tell you, I work from hospital to hospital. I'm a hospital-based physician. And we're increasingly locked down in the hospitals in the sense of not the lockdowns that we had during COVID. But I just mean, you know, we're restricted from certain areas of the hospital, which we didn't used to be. I could wander around a whole hospital as a physician and not be restricted. Now we're restricted to our zones, you know, increasingly protocol driven, increasingly, you know, oh, you can't order that on the electronic health record. It stops you and it makes you explain why you're ordering the medication that you're ordering. We never used to have to do that. And you have to not just click a button, but you have to type in why you're ordering this medicine that the computer has decided you shouldn't be ordering for this patient. Last I checked, I think I'm the doctor. I think I should be ordering that medicine, but increasingly restricted and protocol driven. And this is all coming from the directions for the hospital work. This is all coming from Big Pharma, right? I mean, they control all of these settings. So really, why have any safety parameters in place at all? Because it doesn't matter. No one can speak. No one can critically think. Our students have been trained to think this is normal, been normalized for them. Hospitals more and more protocol driven, more and more, you know, restricted in terms of your movements and your thinking and your actions. This is not the kind of world that I want anyone in my family to live in. I don't want to live in that kind of world. Do you? So we have to turn this around.
It does make me wonder about the role of AI in healthcare, because that is where things are moving. And AI, I would imagine, is going to be programmed to basically follow similar protocols. And I think there's reason to be optimistic and even pessimistic, but I'm curious on your perspective on AI as it evolves into healthcare.
I mean, all technology is helpful to a certain extent, not maybe not all, but most technology is helpful to a certain extent. I would think AI is something that is generally, if used correctly, could be very useful to us. But what I'm seeing it do is I'm seeing it swirl around us right now in a way that's very unpleasant. Do we want AI controlling everything that we do? Do we want it controlling our actions and our movements and our decisions? Do we no longer make decisions? Do we no longer critically think? When we see clear injury from a new shot that just was rolled out, like I did, like we all did, this is not something I saw that was unique to me. We all saw it. Even today at the conference, I was sitting next to someone and telling them the story. And sure enough, her, you know, relative had developed myocarditis within a week of this shot being given to him. You know, I hear this all the time. Clearly there was an issue with this. Do we really want a world where we can't even speak? Where we have technology, where we're shackled because technology controls us, because these big companies control us? Like, this is modern day slavery. And we are shifting into modern day slavery to an extent that if you had made this into a movie, if the last, you know, 5 years and where we're headed in the future, if this continues, had been made into a movie, I would have walked out of the movie theater a really long time ago, because I don't want to see this, right? This is too surreal and too dystopian and too much of a nightmare. So So AI in small amounts, please. Control us? To control us? Never.
It'll be interesting to see how it unfolds. But I do want to end on a positive note. When I was researching to prep for this conversation today, I saw something about your involvement in creating medical freedom clinics. So let's end with this. Where can people find out more about you and your work, like these freedom clinics that I read about?
Yeah, I've just been a volunteer to help a few get off the ground. So I'm not actively involved with any of those right now. I work in hospitals around the country, but I would ask the listener to please look at all the documents. They're public. Take a look and see what happened. Please spread the word about what's happening. Look at silentmajorityfoundation.org. And I think you can probably add that in a banner at the bottom, silentmajorityfoundation.org. Go to the tab free speech or freedom of speech. And I think I'm the second one down. This pediatrician now has a legal team because of what happened. I would never ask for donations for me. This is not about me, but please consider a donation regularly to the Silent Majority Foundation. They're fighting for you. They're fighting for you. They're using my case and other cases that are similar to fight for you, the American people, for all of us. So please consider a donation to them. I promise you, these funds are going to the legal fight with this right now. And you can look at all the documents there. It's like looking at world history. Looking at those documents, honestly. So, yeah, thank you.
And I know there is big cost to speaking the truth. I mean, we've covered quite a bit of it today. So I would encourage folks to check the links that I will put in the show notes, but also stay healthy, stay awake. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Healthy and Awake Podcast. Please remember to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple, or if you're watching this on Rumble or YouTube, please be sure to give us a thumbs up and leave a comment down below. Let us know what you thought, or if you had any questions based on what we talked about in this episode. And of course, it couldn't hurt to share it with your friends, those who maybe are awake, or those, of course, who are waking up. Thanks again. Stay healthy. Stay awake.